so much for staying with Sherrod and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Bridget Welsh, who's in the studio with us. She is with the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Bridget, interesting insights from Donald there. I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but I do want to bring it back home to Malaysia, closer to home. Rumours are rife, of course, that an early general election could be called. Are there lessons that Malaysian politicians should take note of looking at the Singapore example?
I think there are two. The first of which is that campaigns do matter. I think one of the things that happened in Singapore is that the campaign took on a momentum, and that worked in the favor of the opposition. And I think the second one is do not assume that the handling of a pandemic will lead you to a positive result. And I think that, in fairness, Singapore did a very good job, with obviously the issues of foreign workers as an exception. But I would say that generally it's been ahead of the game and proactive. And I think Malaysia as well. Malaysia has a lot of international kudos for its and praise for its performance in terms of a pandemic, but that doesn't necessarily translate to the same way in an election in this context. And I think that's an important lesson in this area. And I think one of the areas where I differ from Donald is that I do think that while the campaign did not focus on economic issues to the same degree as it did in 2011 or even in 2015, I think the economy is still a very important issue, and it is particularly an important issue as the pandemic takes on, moves away from issues of health to the issues of livelihoods and sustainability. And I think this is Malaysia's real challenge, is to, as well, is now to get the economy going. And this translates into issues in the campaigns.
Yeah. So, Bridget, it's interesting because in the Singaporean case, we have this long-standing government, the only government they've had since independence, and they've had they have high levels of performance, right? In terms of the performance index, they've delivered for Singaporeans. So you think that logically they would go back to the PAP as this safe haven, right? I mean, how do we translate that into a Malaysian story? What is the safe, if that's the logic, what is the safe haven in Malaysia? And is that where Malaysians are now? I mean, is that what Malaysians want? If Singaporeans suddenly want representation, the height of a crisis, and not the steady hand of the PAP, what can we draw from that?
Well, I think in the context of Malaysia, the safe haven would be the Barisan Nasional, right, of the past, not the current government, which has only been around for a few months. It hasn't really been able to establish itself for a very long period of time. So in a sense, the PN is actually at a disadvantage if this is an argument is a flight to safety.
You know, something you said earlier in our conversation about the youth vote, about you know, minorities being kind of swing vote, and the elderly as well, it got me thinking about the Malaysian context, especially this kind of disenchantment that youth seem to be projecting, especially on social media and the conversations there, towards the, you know, lack of acknowledgement of the issues that they're facing. Do you see similarities between conversations of youth and the kind of disenchantment of Singaporean youth with what's happening in Malaysia?
Yes. First of all, in Singapore, the youth are only about a third of the electorate in this context. In Malaysia, they're half of the electorate. And every election, that becomes a new election because of the power of young people, new voters that come in, especially given the fact that Malaysia's elections are much more competitive than that of Singapore. But I would say that, comparatively speaking, that the focus, because of what's happening in issues of unemployment, issues in the, I think the focus among young people, at least in terms of the polling that is done here, is much more on bread and butter issues, on the economic side. It doesn't discount the fact that there are aspirational elements as well. But keep in mind, Malaysia has a different history. It has a history of actually the opposition winning power, which we do not have in the context of Singapore. In fact, the opposition is only able, at maximum recently, to win 10 seats out of 93. So I think that it's a different context from the perspective that there's much more openness in Malaysia.
I do want to ask you, and it's a question actually for the region, which is how authoritarian governments in the region learn or don't learn, as it were. Can they self-correct? Is Singapore, lots of smart people in the PAP, and yet they seem to stumble over themselves when trying to respond to the ground. Do you see changes in terms of authoritarian governments, political parties in the region? Can we draw something from that?
Well, I think we have a situation where parties that have been in power for a long time don't see their problems. And I think we saw this in the context of Malaysia and UMNO. And the question now is, how has the party learned the right lessons from its electoral loss in 2018? Or will it actually go back and bring in the older leaders of the past? Or will it allow a regeneration, a rebranding? Mm-hmm. And I think so far the indications are not so clear that they're learning reforms. And I think one of the challenges that the PAP in Singapore is that they still haven't learned the same issues of reform. And that, in fact, much of what I believe in this election was self-inflicted losses on themselves, in the sense of how they responded to opposition. They overreacted. If they had been more magnanimous, more gentle, responding to some of the issues, they probably would have maintained their majority the way it was.
So, Bridget, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Donald a bit earlier. Where do you think Singapore is going next?
Well, I really feel that Singapore is one of the most difficult crossroads in its history. The other time that I put a comparison to is in 1965, when it was separated from Malaysia. And I think as a consequence of that, you have to change its economic model and its political model, and they're linked. Because now we're in an era of deglobalization. Singapore's success came from riding globalization, right? And now it has to change. And this is a very difficult thing to do, especially when you're so used to things in a particular pattern.
Right. Okay, well, that's all the time we have, Bridget. Thank you so much for coming on the show and helping us think through this very complex issue of analysis for Singapore's political landscape. That's all the time we have on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kudin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night. Thanks, Bridget.
Good night. Thank you.